Yo, we're back. Episode 14.
God, we've done 14 of these.
Yeah.
Time flies.
Definitely does. Welcome back to Bitcoin Center, brought to you by Byte Federal. How are you doing today, Paul?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Awesome. You know, it's been fun starting off the week. There's been some good tweets. I just saw that the SEC declared crypto liquid staking activities are not considered securities. And Jesse Powell, the co-founder and chairman of Kraken, wrote, "Can I get a $30 million refund?"
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of crazy there. What do you make of the SEC sort of and they're dealing here with liquid staking activities?
It just goes to show you that what is the saying? He who holds the gold makes the rules or whatever, right? It's what a joke. I don't know.
I think
when it suits the current state of affairs, they can do whatever they want.
This is true. You know, I do think that it's going to play into a lot of what we're going to talk about tonight, though.
Yeah.
With sort of crypto. Yeah. I mean, we always say Bitcoin, not shitcoin, but I think, you know, if you're talking about the news, I think it's fair to use the term crypto here, just in terms of how maybe, you know, like the crypto legislation that's being passed. And
yeah, I'm just not, you know, that.
Yeah, but
wake me up when we start talking about Bitcoin.
Well, I think that's the dream. I think, or you know, people are sleeping on that they're not talking about Bitcoin, and I think we'll talk about that tonight. So let's get into it.
All right, let's do it.
Welcome back to Bitcoin Center. My name is Cedric Youngleman.
Paul Tarantino.
And this is presented by Byte Federal.
Go bank yourself. All right, the first topic, Cedric, the White House unveils the golden age of crypto. Were there any surprises in Wednesday's release?
Surprises? I think if you're surprised at this point that Bitcoin was not in the release, you're not keeping up with the program. This has just been a complete bait and switch to me. That I expected.
Yeah.
Or been kind of thinking about. I don't think Bitcoin was in it at all. I don't think this is anything about Bitcoin. I think this is all about crypto and really stable coins and treasuries. So I didn't see any surprises in there, to be honest. This really kind of dealt or kind of paved the way for more crypto to be allowed to be traded sort of at a federal basis for, you know, sort of different regulatory agencies to get more aligned. But this is really about, this has nothing to do with Bitcoin, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Bitcoin's kind of included, but this is not about Bitcoin.
Bitcoin's coming last. And this is why.
Yeah.
This is why. I'm going to tell you what's why. I'm going to give you the why.
Okay.
The why is this. Governments throughout history have had to inflate away their debt. So if you inflate away the debt, the average middle class American is going to get destroyed. So step one, get stable coins approved in the banks, get companies to issue stable coins. Step two, crypto regulation. So that's all the Clarity Act and the Genius Act, everything, yep. all clear sailing, go do your thing. Staking's good. This is good. It's all good. While you're doing that, go build a $2 billion treasury for yourself. Go build a bunch of companies with Bitcoin treasuries. Get whatever Bitcoin you have everywhere you can throughout the United States. Make sure all your rich buddies got the Bitcoin. Because at that later date, when you pump Bitcoin, the more Bitcoin in, the higher the price goes, the more stable coins will exist. They're correlated. So the higher the Bitcoin price goes up, the more volume of stable coins will be in existence. Now you can inflate by going direct. You can sell your treasuries without going through the Fed. You can bypass the Fed, go straight to the stablecoin issuers, have them buy your treasuries, and therefore you can devalue the currency whilst pushing the currency out globally, pushing that inflation into Bitcoin. And hopefully you don't push that inflation into gas and food and
right
home prices. Hopefully you're just making your buddies rich.
Yep, I agree. They call it the golden age. Let's move to the next topic. But something I want to put a thought bubble in is the correlation there. Come back to that. All right. Trump media reveals $2 billion Bitcoin bet. Is Trump media hodlers or opportunists? That's a good question. There you go.
I think I just explained the
yeah, but are they hodlers? Are they gonna sell?
I don't think. I think they're early in Bitcoin, and like most people who are early in Bitcoin, it's I'm here to get rich.
Sure,
I could probably do this better than anybody else.
Everyone
the ego
thinks so.
Still dominates. It's not until you understand you should have never sold. It's not until you make mistakes, not until you play with shit coins that you realize I should have just hodled.
Right.
So I don't think they're hodlers yet. I think everybody becomes a hodler over time.
Right.
As long as your ego is in check, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, I agree. I don't think the government needs another asset they will never sell. They need to sell treasuries. So they do need the stablecoin market to rise to sell the treasuries. Yeah. They don't want to buy Bitcoin and hold it forever. They've been holding the gold forever, and it's not really helping them sell the treasuries.
We don't know.
I hear you. We don't know. But even if they weren't, the money's no longer tethered to gold. So people haven't cared in a while.
They don't really care.
Yeah.
All right.
Move on to the next one.
The SEC approves in-kind Bitcoin ETF transactions. Will this unlock real arbitrage and tighter spreads?
So it's supposed to. That's the whole idea. This is for the authorized participants, and this eliminates some of the fees and friction that comes with having to settle in cash between these different assets. So it should result in lower fees in the ETFs for the retail participants, and there's room there for the fees to go down even more. Will it? I mean, what is the rush for Wall Street to lower the fees? The inflows have been tremendous.
Yeah.
There's no... that maybe competition between the ETFs would drive the fees down through this process. This is helpful. This is not a bad thing. And hopefully this pays the way. But this has nothing to do with retail in kind in and out. So this, but hopefully this paves the way for that down the road. But this is helpful to retail participants in the ETF. I believe it is.
Explain to me. So the idea would be that if you hold a bunch of Bitcoin, you could move it into the ETF?
Directly, yes, without having to go through cash and vice versa, which is how they do a lot of the other commodity base or security. You do it with shares instead of having to go to cash. Even if it's like a share-based ETF, you'd want to be able to not go through cash to go in and out of the fund. And a lot of the lower fee funds, this is how they try to avoid fees. And this is why they also don't want money coming into the fund as retail participants and exiting, because
somebody's like, hey, I've got a giant concentrated position in Eli Lilly stock, and I can in kind transfer it into like an S&P 500 fund for shares of the fund.
This is for authorized participants. This is like JP Morgan, who's the desk behind the ETF, who provides liquidity on both sides for the ETFs on a daily basis.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so there is just constant movement and out.
Gotcha.
And so they have to facilitate the revaluations of the funds. And so it should, in theory, it's how it's led to lower fees in other areas of ETFs.
Okay.
So hopefully, you know, that bleeds to the participants there. Yeah.
Got it.
All right. Moving on. El Salvador and Bolivia signed deal to integrate Bitcoin and crypto into Bolivia's financial system.
Mm-hmm.
Is Bolivia the next El Salvador?
It sounds like it. From what I've read, it's basically El Salvador is consulting Bolivia on how to execute the same game plan.
Right. What is the game plan?
That's the big question. I think that's later on, and that's for another discussion down here. But I think... it looks to me like this is a smart move on Bolivia's, they're going to learn from El Salvador's mistake. I think Nayib's been pretty straightforward in that they didn't execute some of the stuff as well as they should have. And so hopefully there's they can learn from El Salvador's mistake and make a smoother transition. And it looks like it's already working out for Bolivia. I know that their activity, the crypto activity, is up like 6x since
Well, it seems like crypto activity is just rising everywhere, especially in the youth. And, you know, with inflation. It also, this is coming on the heels of Bukele's trip to Pakistan that we talked about last week. So
I also
all these petri dishes of national adoption are interesting.
This goes back to the first comment I was making. I think this is all related, right? If you're, you just look around the world, governments are going to have to inflate and destroy their fiat currency. If you know stable coins, they're already pricing, right? Bolivia is already pricing goods in USDT. So if you know stable coins are coming to your population, you better get ready for the future.
Right.
Because you're going to be the general manager of your district for the dollar.
Yeah.
And you're, and that dollar is going to expand with the price of Bitcoin.
Right.
And your fiat is going to die. And your government is not going to be able to just print
and
pesos or bullet, whatever the hell their currency is right into oblivion.
I think real national adoption is going to be through hash power. And I think it's going to be through these smaller nations that try to acquire Bitcoin through hashing. And it'll be interesting to see who turns nuclear energy towards Bitcoin first. We talked about a week or two ago with France.
Yep.
Let's move on to the next one.
Grant Cardone. Cardone Capital adds 100 Bitcoin on dip. They're moving from real estate and creating a Bitcoin treasury company. Is that what's going on?
I don't know if that's exactly what's going on. What I gathered from the tweet, he responded. Somebody asked him if he bought it with debt, and he said no. So it doesn't sound like they're starting a sort of a Bitcoin treasury company through sort of fiat arbitrage in that sense. It seems like they just reallocated. So I think it's really interesting to see the, you know, the synergy between real estate and Bitcoin. And I'm excited for that at what hopefully is a large level by some of these larger players in real estate, leaning on Bitcoin to help their reserves.
That reminds me, we're going to have to get the guys from, they're going to kill me because I'm forgetting the name of their company now, but Orange something or other. Sorry, guys. I apologize. But it's really cool because it's basically a home equity line that's used specifically to buy Bitcoin.
Right.
And
that's an interesting way to unlock liquidity. Everyone's trying to figure out that Rubik's, that kind of like that little jigsaw puzzle of what works in Bitcoin and how to financialize it in a way that makes sense for Bitcoiners.
Yep, 100%. So,
all right, let's move on to the lightning round. Make sure to like and subscribe. And this is the lightning round. So we're going to blow through these 10 topics real quick. And this is brought to you by Bite Federal. I'm up first. Strategy posts first profit in 6 quarters. After a $14 billion Bitcoin gain, MicroStrategy says themselves that they're undervalued. Do you think the analysts are going to catch up anytime soon?
I mean, they have to change their whole framework, right? Because if, you know, it's not about earnings per share, it's about Bitcoin per share. And if they're not wrapping their head around monetization of Bitcoin, then I don't think they're going to quite grok Bitcoin per share. They're still, I don't think that they're quite analyzing it the right way, right? To say that these are just, you know, that hey, we made $14 billion in earnings, that's great, but it doesn't tell the whole story.
I agree. I think someone who's getting really good at telling the story is Preston Pysh. And I think he's coming on, I think he's on a Frat show recently, and You're the Voice podcast. And the way he explained it is just so, it breaks it down real simple for me. He's just explaining that the amount of Bitcoin that they're, you know, putting on the balance sheet with a 40 to 50% CAGR over time is just going to create the, you know, the dividend payment streams to make them de minimis. And immaterial, and you know, maybe those payments are, you know, 10% or something, right? So if you got a CAGR of 40% and your payments are 10%, you can capture on behalf of your shareholders that 30% arbitrage on that deal, right? And I think the biggest threat here though is volatility. you know, and balance sheet management and all these yes. things and all sort of this human part of this. But that's the game. And I think if it could be explained to Wall Street would be, because right now with the FASB chains and all the earnings per share, yeah. like it just, there's no trail, there's no tail, there's no 12 month lag. There's no five quarters in a row. It's a one-time event yeah. and it's unrealized gains. Yeah. I don't think they're going to catch up anytime soon, to be honest.
No, that's they're not going to catch up anytime
soon. Let's move on to the next one.
All right. There's 127,000 Bitcoin stolen. It was the biggest Bitcoin heist in history that went unnoticed. This is now the largest digital asset heist in history, bigger than Mt. Gox.
Yeah.
Bitfinex and the recent $1.5 billion Bybit hack from 2025.
Totally.
Will this kill public trust in Bitcoin?
No, I don't think so at all. Well, first of all, I don't think the public trust has any trust in Bitcoin. So there's no trust to be killed, really, at the mainstream level. I don't think they understand this story. It is really interesting that Bitcoiners, I didn't know about this story. I didn't know about this pool. This pool, Lubin or something?
Lubin, yeah, something like that.
They're like, they were one of the biggest pools in the world like 5 years ago. They had like 6% of hash power. They had this hack in 2020 on December 28th of 2020. They had, I think at the time, $3.5 billion worth of Bitcoin hacked, just kind of taken away.
Yeah.
The way it was explained in the articles is that they used a poor algorithm to generate the private addresses
right.
that could be brute forced, and that none of this was made public by either the hackers or the pool for years until this outside firm looked at this. So, and then the hacked coins didn't move for 4 years, and now they've been stuck at this one address since 2024. And 11,000 coins were recovered. I mean, this is just a very fascinating. So, and they were trying to send messages through Op Return to the hackers begging for the coins back. I don't know how that ever works, but this is fascinating. I think it'd be interesting to follow the coins over time.
Yeah.
You know, and see, I'd like to see them go free to prove the privacy of Bitcoin, to be in some, that's an ulterior motive of mine.
Right.
For, you know, the hackers to be successful in offloading this Bitcoin, even if they don't sell, but to just prove the privacy
of it. What if the hacker is a state actor?
I think it is.
And they don't really,
it could be the US.
They don't really intend to ever spend the Bitcoin.
Sure. I don't think the government wants something they can never sell. And they can't sell the Bitcoin if they bought it. Like the, I we could go on for that. Let's go to the next one. Right. We could debate that every show. Fed holds rates steady. Mm-hmm. Will Powell bend and cut later this year? And what do you think of him holding steady?
It didn't surprise me. That's his end goal. I don't know if he. I can see him bending and giving 25, 50 basis points if the economy slows, if inflation is no longer a risk in his view, then yeah, I could see us getting 25 or 50 basis points later this year. But I don't think that'll be because things are good.
Right.
I think if we get 25 or 50 basis points cuts, it's going to be because the economy is slowing and things are going bad. So he's playing, you know, traditional Fed chairman stuff.
Is he doing a good job? I think I saw some commentary. I think some people think he's the greatest of all time.
So it's interesting, right? It's really interesting. This whole, I had a long conversation with Tom Luongo about this.
Yeah.
It'll be out on our podcast next week. And, you know, is Jerome Powell playing a game? Is he central casting for this big runaround where
so they could have a different kind of currency,
because him and Bessent are having breakfast like every Monday together or something like that. So they're buddies, and then Bessent's blasting the Fed, and then Trump's in the Fed building complaining about the reconstruction.
On TV, then no less. Like, why would Powell set himself up for that if they're not really getting along? Right.
But then Powell keeps rates high, which is crushing Europe.
Right.
It's crushing the London banks. It's crushing the central banks around the world, right? So it's forcing the destruction of their fiat. It's crushing their economy. It's not really putting too much pressure on ours. And if Bessent and team are doing yield curve control on their own, and they plan to do even more by selling treasuries direct to stablecoin companies, do they not? They don't need the Fed. So the idea is that maybe the Fed's last use case is implement SOFR, right. Get rid of LIBOR, destroy London banks, destroy the Eurodollar system, so right. that the dollar demand that was all put out through that system can be pushed out through stablecoins and directly funded by the Fed.
Yeah. We'll see. Did you see Trump called in to Joe Squawk today?
No.
I won't go into that too much, but Joe asked him, who are you going to name for Fed president if you get rid of Powell? And Trump wouldn't name a name, but he said not Bessent. Bessent likes what he's doing, doesn't want to be Fed chairman.
I agree with that. Okay, sure. Mining difficulty hits an all-time high. Will mining difficulty rise with Bitcoin price forever or plateau at some point?
I think it will rise forever. I think it will be a leading indicator for quite a long time. And I think that that's going to be driven mm-hmm. through national adoption, through hash rate. I think just more and more power is going to be directed at the network mm-hmm. to get these scarce sats, especially when there's less liquidity on the what's called the private market for sats, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to go up forever. I think it's a leading indicator. I think it's important to watch. I think there will be plateaus. And I think the higher the Bitcoin price goes, the more and longer each plateau might be.
Yeah, I agree.
So
no argument for me.
All right. Next one is Bukele's authoritarian power grab.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, let me read the topic. El Salvador approves indefinite presidential re-election. Is Bukele's authoritarian power grab exposing a blind spot in Bitcoiner support for pro-Bitcoin politicians?
It might be for some Bitcoiners. I don't know. I this has not been a blind spot for me. I feel like this has been the direction that El Salvador has been moving with the very first time he like dropped out early so he could run again. You know, they engineered that whole re-election. Yeah, this has been in play
for a while, do you think this is an authoritarian power grab, though, or just a benevolent democratic way of maneuvering through the system to be an indefinite leader in a democratic system?
That's probably the later, but I have an even more tinfoil hat take.
Sure,
on
okay,
this,
let's right? go.
I've always felt like Bukele was running...
Like a CIA project.
Like running the CIA project to test this theory for the United States.
Right.
Which is why
it's interesting Tether's setting up there, part of that project.
Yeah, I feel it's an
offshoot of that.
A subsidiary of the United States.
And it's taking our prisoners,
degree.
I think, or they've all...
Yeah, it's taking our prisoners.
Which is a weird relationship an antagonist
when he
to
came
do
and
for
spoke
us.
At CPAC.
Which was odd.
Yeah, and like
for the narrative,
and then grilled the United States tax system, interest rates, inflation, laid out the entire case. It was like we're testing the waters to see if we can run on this agenda, to see if we can pull this stuff off. He pulls this off. What makes you think that Trump isn't going to try this?
I don't know.
There's already rumors that he's going to try this and run for
this
a third
kind of
term.
Thing. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Right. So I see what you're saying. I think it's all sort of a petri dish and through the direction maybe of the three letter agencies.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. That's definitely.
But, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners have talked about authoritarianism or monarchies, I should say.
As a positive, benevolent type force.
Yes,
and democracy is two sheep, two wolves and a sheep arguing about dinner.
Right. Maybe the Bitcoiners that are fooled are the ones that think that we actually have a democracy.
Right. I get what you're saying. Right,
We actually vote for somebody.
So the veil's like removed here.
Right.
All right. Let's move on to the next one.
Indonesia axes VAT on crypto sales. Part of the bigger strategic bet on Bitcoin tourism and remittances to compete with Singapore's fintech hub.
I really don't think that this is a big deal at all. I read through this article here and it felt that this is a minor tax on trading. And that they were moving it, but you're still going to get a VAT tax. The exchange is still going to charge you a VAT tax for facilitating and servicing the trade. And I think it was something like 1-2% the VAT tax on trading. So I think this is sort of like we won't directly tax the retail consumer of crypto because they are seeing a lot of demand in Indonesia for young people for crypto. So I think they do want to facilitate it, but this, I think,
what
this
does
is
that
like
have to do with tourism?
Hemming and hawing. I didn't see it as a big deal for tourism or to compete with Singapore. It didn't seem very strategic. It seemed very minor, and it seemed like shifting of the tax from direct to retail to through the money transmitter business. So I thought it was a nothing burger.
Okay.
Let's move on to the next one. Fold and Black Hawk deal brings Bitcoin access to 400,000 U.S. retailers. Will this push mainstream adoption once and for all?
No,
that's a good one.
I mean, sorry. I think I got that one wrong.
Well, you jumped a few. You jumped ahead a few questions. Should we do the fold or go back?
Let's go back.
All right, let's go back.
So ex-Bitcoin CEO Arthur Hayes warns Bitcoin may retrace to 100K amid macro headwind. Where do you think we are on the cycle?
No, I think he makes a good case for it. I think Bitcoin now, and I've been feeling this way more and more, is going to be linked to the economic cycle and the refinancing cycle, as others phrase it, more so than the four-year cycle. Like the four-year cycle is probably still a part of this, but I think we're going to start, because there's so many treasuries buying Bitcoin, so many sovereigns buying Bitcoin, pensions funds buying Bitcoin, we're now going to be in a position where what's the liquidity globally? And if that's retracting and refinancing is getting more difficult and financial conditions are getting tighter, then Bitcoin's growth is going to slow. And I think that's what Arthur is suggesting here, that we've now maybe moved to become a bigger part of the macro cycle as opposed to the four-year cycle or the Bitcoin cycle.
Yeah, I can see that. Much more like mini cycles within the four-year cycle of like 3 months.
Or it's just it's a bigger cycle now, right? I mean, like I understand what you're saying for mini, because I do think any economic downturn is going to be met with printing rapidly. Because
that's what everyone's waiting on, I think. I think liquidity really does. I think interest rates really does drive. Easy money drives, I think, Bitcoin.
But I think the liquidity is going to come through stablecoins now.
All right. Yeah, I think everyone's waiting for the faucet to open.
All right. Metaplanet's $3.7 billion Bitcoin plan. Has Metaplanet cemented its position as the strategy of Asia?
I don't think it's cemented. I think they're getting out in front. I also, this plan is sort of a shelf plan. So it's no intention to sell these preferred. It doesn't have they don't have a plan necessarily. They're going to do it. They have the right or the ability through their, you know, the securities exchange in Japan to do this for over the next 2 years if they choose to, when market conditions align. Mm-hmm. I do think that they're excited for when those market conditions align, because this is one of the preferable ways to acquire Bitcoin if you're a Bitcoin treasury.
Yeah, company. I think it's going to come faster than you realize. I think.
Yeah.
I think Japan is ripe for this.
Yeah, and so,
I mean, to be the first, why would you wait to be the first person?
But there are other competitors, and the laws can change around sort of the, you know, the retirement funds and the tax system in Japan. But I think they are out in front. I think they're kind of like strategy in Japan. They have the playbook. They're augmenting the playbook. We'll see how it unfolds. Yeah,
especially with how well.
But you notice the whole market, the whole Bitcoin treasury market, whatever we want to call that right now, the sector has contracted massively on the MNEV.
Yeah.
And we're going through that. What some might see as a 3 month cycle in that market.
Yeah, that's true.
So, all right, let's go on to the next one.
Now to fold.
Fold. Okay. So the Black Hawk deal brings access to 400,000 U.S. retailers. Will this push mainstream adoption once and for all? What the hell is Black Hawk? Tell me. Is that platform or POS?
They run gift cards or pre-funded, you know, cards. So this is a Bitcoin card. You get like you pay $25, $50, $100, $500 for your card. You get some sort of code. Then you can take that code and the card to your Fold app and fill your Fold app with that amount of Bitcoin. So you could buy a $500 Bitcoin gift card and give it to somebody. I think it's an awesome idea. I think it's really cool. I mean, Bitcoiners are going to buy it to give it to their friends. It's a birthday party. You're going to buy, you know, that gift card to your friend. You're going to give it to your friend's kids. It's, your kids get it for his bar mitzvah. You know, it's the way it goes, right? It's like everybody's getting Bitcoin now. So I think it's awesome. And I think it's great.
I don't know if that leads to mainstream adoption.
Yeah, I don't think it leads to mainstream adoption.
The jury's out on that. I love what Fold's doing.
But it's not going to hurt. It's around, awesome. But, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt at all. I think it's similar to what Strike tried to do a few years ago with POS. But yeah, I think
this is going to work better than the POS.
Yeah, we'll see. Because it sounds complicated to me having to buy the thing and put the thing and then upload the thing.
But it gets them to do a little work.
Yeah, maybe one Bitcoin. Click. No one wants to work in this whole economy. All right, let's go to the next one.
JP Morgan to enable credit card Bitcoin buys. Mainstream breakthrough or just catching up?
I think it's just catching up. I think it sort of signals mainstream adoption because it's a huge bank. This is really the antithesis or the end of Operation Choke Point 2.0. But I think Jamie Dimon has been very strategic about being in on the picks and axes here and making money on fees as an authorized participant to the ETFs. You know, he's not holding Bitcoin, but he's not buying Bitcoin, but he's selling the Bitcoin to the ETFs.
Their relationship with Coinbase is bigger than that, right?
I don't know the extent of the relationship, but now people can send their money from Chase to Coinbase much more directly. Why?
And I mean, they could
fund a wallet with their credit card from Chase over at Coinbase.
Prior to that, if I had a Chase credit card, they would have blocked the transaction?
I think so. I I don't know what the current situation is that this is alleviating.
It's like proof of marketing. Because if I have a Chase Visa card,
and
I don't think they're blocking me from using it to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, I really think this is also about stable coins. Down the road, I think this is about getting you to be able to buy and get rewards and everything. And yeah, I think this is also about getting rewards in USDC.
I'm going to call it proof of marketing.
It is proof of marketing, but I also think it's proof of fees. I think JP Morgan just really wants to capture as many fees as possible around Bitcoin, mm-hmm. crypto, and especially stable coins. And I think they want to issue their own stable coin. So I don't know.
Yeah,
Jamie Dimon's always like a gangster when he's over on TV.
I thought they were going to do something more than that, so maybe we'll have this topic up again in the future. But yeah. All right.
This one. The UK's Online Safety Act officially coming into force, protecting kids or online censorship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do like the idea of protecting our kids from seeing certain stuff online.
Yeah. I hear you.
I mean, they already know so much about us already. It's kind of shocking that it.
Yeah, but this goes both ways. You know, this is like in the name of protecting kids.
Sure.
And delivering online censorship.
We don't let kids drive until they're a certain age.
Sure, I get it. Why? Why?
Until they're a certain age. We don't. You know, let's not let them peruse Pornhub until they're a certain age.
I get that.
Let's not let them see certain amounts of violence. And
I mean, Elon Musk I think he's one of the biggest offenders of this.
That's what I'm getting at, because, right? They have so much data on us already. They know our faces. They know our ID. They know our traffic.
No, but I'm an adult. I don't need or want to consume porn when I go on Twitter. And
I see what you're saying. Okay.
It's like it can be there and had nothing to do with the topic.
I guess what I was saying is I'm surprised some company hasn't, let's say Meta or X or somebody hasn't just said, you know what, we're going to be the family friendly social network. And
the walled garden's really hard. AOL tried that at first. It's really hard to pull that off. And I think even Facebook struggles with that. With the links.
And then the dark side of this, right, is this is going to lead to the European Union's digital ID, right?
Yeah, that's where I think this is all going. And I think the benefits will probably be outweighed, but I think in this case, the benefits are warranted. We don't want kids exposed to certain things.
Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's up to you, parents.
It is. I agree with that. But it's a lot for parents. I mean, in our society, a lot of people, both parents are working. Better at the devices. And just you could lock up all these devices, you could protect them. But the kids are like the terrorists and the criminals with the technology. They always adopt
they're
it
way
and
faster and
then faster.
Yeah.
So whatever gates you put up will be broken through.
Yeah. No, I wasn't. You know, I wasn't even thinking of it in terms of gates as much as I was thinking of it in terms of how you discuss it with your kids and how you explain the world and the craziness that's online relative to the value of what you do in your own life versus what you see on online. That I think that's the bigger discussion.
Yeah, that and shut up, don't tell me you're 13 yet, so we can still get the kids' price on the buffet, you know? Like, and I'm not teaching you to lie, but you know, we could squeeze you in here. You know, yeah.
I hope they just don't censor The Simpsons, because The Simpsons
they predict the future.
I mean, our kids need to know.
Is that priming or sort of building awareness?
Did you see that recently?
No.
I just saw that.
Which one?
There's a bunch of Simpson episodes where they are showing Trump's funeral, August 12, 2025.
Like a new Simpson?
I don't know if it's new or I just
this
saw,
was like a clip from an old
I
one.
I saw clips from
dude,
people
I
were
saw
pushing
this.
Around.
Josh Mandel tweet today talking about 9/11 and how like Cantor Fitzgerald had the playbook for that there was earlier versions of the Bitcoin code and they were different, you know, it's wild. Just
there's some wild stuff out there. It's not the world is not what we think it is.
Yeah, so I think that'd be a good place to wrap up for the week. We'll see you next week in episode 15. This is Bitcoin Center. My name is Cedric Youngelman.
Paul Tarantino.
And this is brought to you by Bite Federal.
Go bank yourself.
Yeah. Point of sale, ATM, the wallet.